This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Stands, we've had all the fuss and feathers, but it's time for Dodger Baseball.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's the Adam Gold Show. How's everybody doing? I'm Adam Gold. Dennis Cox is here. We lost one last night. Man. I've been feeling a little nostalgic lately anyway. And then Vin Scully passes away last night. 94 years old. I think it goes without saying. By the way, did I mention this is the Adam Gold Show? You can watch this on TV.
Yeah.
I'm a little...
It's in the show open, too, that I play.
That is true.
It's in there twice. You're good. You don't need it. They already know who we are.
So, I am significantly older than you, Dennis.
But, allegedly.
But you have like an old soul for sports, for nostalgia.
Yeah.
And if you are a sports fan of, especially of my age, you grew up in an era where you connected with your team, a lot of it through radio, not even through television. You know, you don't have to go back that far before not every game was available on TV, right? I don't know when the first team was that put all 162 baseball games on television, but there was a time where about half of big league baseball games were available on TV. And gosh, we don't have to go back that far for the Carolina Hurricanes, where the Hurricanes would have like 68 games in their TV package. They play 82.
Mm-hmm.
And now everything is available on television. But it used to be your connection to your team was on radio. And you know, I was the kid who went to sleep at night with the game on the little handheld transistor radio right next to my pillow and listening to a Mets game on the West Coast or a Knicks game or an Islanders game if they were on the West Coast. That's what I was doing. I was that kid. And it was through that we connected and we became real sports fans. Today, it's just not the same, and I'm not lamenting anything. It's just different. Not better or worse. It's less romantic. You know, we talked about earlier this week the fun part of allowing yourself to care about the outcomes of games. The benefit you get from really allowing yourself, I mean, I'll even extra romanticize it here, allowing your favorite team to grab your heart, it creates some problems because the disappointment sometimes is powerful. But I don't think anything can compare to when you really devote yourself to it when your team wins.
Mm-hmm.
So for NC State fans who really devoted themselves to the cause, if you will.
Yeah.
What was 83 like? Right?
Yeah.
Right? Well, like, if you're just a casual fan, 83 is fun. But if you're a diehard, man, you still can remember. You can still close your eyes and conjure that up.
Oh, yeah.
Hurricanes fans here can still remember 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that part. Like, who's your voice growing up?
I don't know if I had one. in all honesty. Because, well, I guess you say I listen to Virginia sports a lot because this is where I grew up.
You grew up in Charlottesville.
So Mac McDonald was the guy. But I will say this, tying this into Vin Scully.
Right.
My best friend's father is from Southern California and is a diehard Dodger fan. So he instilled that into my best friend. So anytime in high school, staying the night at my best friend's house, my dad's or my best friend's father would have the Dodgers games on. And we would just watch and listen to Vin Scully. That's what we would do all the way back in high school, just because that's what he grew up to, and he passed that along to us. But for me growing up, it was, I would say it was Mac McDonald was the voice of Virginia Cavaliers. That's what I listened to because that was the local school.
You're a Steelers fan.
Yeah.
Was there is there a Steeler voice?
Oh, Myron Cope.
Myron Cope.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Like there are iconic Harry Callis with the Phillies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have my own voices, and we're going to get to some of those a little bit later on.
It's like this in this state, John Forslund with the Canes.
Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah, or Chuck Caton, or both.
Both.
Yeah, both those guys.
Yeah. Chuck was in, came into studio last week. We're doing a special look back on the move from Hartford to North Carolina. So spent some time talking to Chuck. John will be, I'll talk to John next week for that too. And yeah, they're two of my all-time favorite voices. The connection to the fans from, you know, between the team and the fans, the connection is always the broadcaster. All right, we're going to start, and then I'm going to read a tweet from a really good friend of mine. So let's get going. I just want to start this by reading a tweet that Wes Durham put out earlier today. And we all know his dad, Woody Durham, is one of the all-time iconic college sports play-by-play guys. So many people... my kid's wearing the T-shirt we got from Wes... The go where you go, do what you do T-shirt to raise money, right? My kid's wearing that now. He has no idea what it is. But every time I see it, and I was never even a Tar Heel fan, but every time I see it, I think of Woody Durham. And I think of Wes. So Wes tweeted out earlier today, one of hashtag Hey Woody most prized notes came long after he retired in 2011 from Vin Scully. Couldn't believe this icon had written him. Prayers and blessings to Mr. Scully's friends and family tonight. Here's the note with a Los Angeles Dodgers letterhead. Handwritten. Dear Woody, I never had the chance to meet you, but I know the love the people of Carolina have for you has reached Southern California, along with great respect and admiration. Please accept my personal congratulations on a great career. Blessings to you and yours, Vin Scully. And it says Vin Scully at the bottom of the, just a quick handwritten note. So Scully took the time, having never met Woody Durham, to extend those well wishes after Woody's retirement. I mean, just Scully was incredible. And I mentioned this a second ago, whether you're a Scully fan or John Forslund. Red Sox fans would, like, remember Kurt Gowdy. Knicks fans, Marv Albert. The best of the best, Vin Scully, passed away again last night. Started with the Brooklyn Dodgers in the 50s. Went to the Los Angeles Dodgers when the team moved across the country in 1957. He was the national voice for two different networks, CBS and NBC. He did the Masters. He did football. I mean, he was everywhere, right? Iconic probably doesn't do Vin Scully justice. Sandy Koufax pitched a perfect game. Vin Scully was there.
As Sandy Koufax walked out to the mound... to pitch a fateful ninth where he turned in a no-hitter. But tonight, September the 9th, 1965, he made the toughest walk of his career, I'm sure, because through eight innings, he has pitched a perfect game. 1-2, the count to Chris Krug. It is 9:41 p.m. on September the 9th. Sandy reading signs into his windup, 2-2 pitch. Fastball got him swinging. Sandy Koufax has struck out 12. He is two outs away from a perfect game. I would think that the mound at Dodger Stadium right now is the loneliest place in the world. Looks in to get a sign. 0-2 to Amalfitano. The strike two pitch to Joe. Fastball swung on and missed. Strike three. He is one out away from the promised land. It is 9:46 p.m. 2-2 to Harvey Keene. One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed. A perfect game.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But
you can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
I think it gives me chills. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even a Dodgers fan.
I love the timestamp.
Yeah.
These
look. I mean,
I love that.
Giving you everything you need from the scene, right? He's painting that picture.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things about the greats, and we all have different definitions of what it is, but for me, I've always thought that the greats, the best, don't have to homer it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, I'm not saying that the Harry Carries of the world were not outstanding broadcasters. It's not about that. They were homers, and that's fine. The separator for me when it comes to the all-timers are that they don't have to homer it up. They do the game justice. They do the moment justice by doing it straight. Because the greats recognize that those moments will be remembered forever, even if it happens at the expense of the team that pays their salary. This day in April of 1973, I think it was 73 or 74, when Henry Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record. Here's Scully, because it was the Dodgers in Atlanta.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
This scene is amazing as he's rounding the bases.
What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
Just incredible
moment.
One thing people may not know is, like, yeah, there was that long pause where you just heard crowd noise. I cut that down just for time. I think something that a great broadcaster does well is knowing when not to talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing. Like, you just let the moment breathe.
He did that a lot.
Yeah.
One that we're going to play here, I know because I see the time of your that you have for this play-by-play call. When Kirk Gibson comes out of the dugout to pinch hit in the bottom of the ninth inning with two outs in game one of the World Series against the A's. Scully just says, and look who's coming up, right? Because Gibson wasn't waiting on deck. He was in the dugout. And then he comes out of the dugout, and he's limping to the plate. And he goes, look who's coming up. And then Scully just goes silent. And for about 45 seconds, the crowd is bonkers. Bonkers when Gibson stands in against Dennis Eckersley.
And look who's coming up. Sacks waiting on deck, but the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened. And now the only question was, could he make it around the base paths unassisted?
I mean, how much of just crowd noise did you have to cut out to get all of that?
In all honesty, like 2 minutes.
It's amazing.
Legit, because
it's amazing.
He does the home run call. When he says the impossible has happened, that's after he had crossed home plate, celebrated, was basically going back into the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how much time it was. I cut out a lot.
And here's what's really cool about that particular one, which I watched from start to finish earlier today, is even when there is, theoretically, this is how non-baseball fans look at it, even when there's nothing going on, first of all, there's always something going on in baseball. But even when there is no action per se, he is painting a picture and telling a story. And we're actually going to show, kind of illustrate some of those things later on with some legitimate stories that Scully is weaving into broadcast, which are absolutely hysterical. But the at-bat with foul balls and, pitches out of the strike zone, he has the ability to make them all dramatic, and that is a rare gift. One of my favorite moments is actually one of his best. Had nothing to do with the Dodgers, 1986.
And it's going to go to the backstop. Here comes Mitchell to score the tying run, and Ray Knight is at second base. So the winning run is at second base with two out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight and the Mets win it. If one picture is worth 1,000 words, you have seen about 1,000,000 words. But more than that, you have seen an absolutely bizarre finish to Game 6 of the 1986 World Series.
Just incredible. I mean, the Mets went from dead to winning that game and then coming back and winning Game 7. But Scully and Joe Garagiola were just incredible on play-by-play. That game was on NBC in 1986. But it wasn't just baseball. For Vin Scully, he did football too, and he did for CBS one of the signature moments in NFL history.
And of course, for the upstart 49ers, they're 6 yards away from Pontiac, 3rd and 3.
We'll see a pickup sometime on the right side, possibly.
Montana looking, throwing in the end zone. Clark caught it. Dwight Clark. It's a madhouse at Candlestick with 51 seconds left. Dwight Clark is 6'4". He stands about 10 feet tall in this crowd's estimation.
I mean, that's the start of the 49ers dynasty. It's not really a dynasty, but that was the era. That was the best of the 49ers era right there. It went on for a long time because it spanned Montana through Steve Young.
Yeah.
But that was the kickoff of it against the other America's team, against the Dallas Cowboys at the time. 1981, they went on to win the Super Bowl in Pontiac, Michigan against the Cincinnati Bengals. First of two times they beat the Bengals in a Super Bowl. And the second one had the drive, but that had nothing to do with Vin Scully. Just an absolute incredible voice, our connection to sports through Vin Scully. All right, a couple of other things to get to before we hit our first break. Mike DeCourcy will join us in just a few minutes. Happy birthday to Tom Brady. He's 45 years old today.
45?
45 years old today, Tom Brady.
Yes.
Like, you know what? I remember when Brady said a long time ago that his goal was to play until he was 45. Well, you did it. I mean, we haven't gotten there yet. He hasn't played it down yet at age 45, but 8 Super Bowls, right? Maybe more incredible than 8 Super Bowls is that in the history of the NFL, as far as we can chronicle, there are 3 instances where an organization has been docked a first-round draft pick for breaking the rules, right? An organization 3 times in NFL history has lost first-round draft picks for breaking the rules. And Tom Brady is at least indirectly involved in all 3. All 3 of them. Spygate, not his fault. That was more Bill Belichick. Spygate cost the Patriots a first-round pick. Deflategate. We can debate all day long whether or not Tom Brady had footballs deflated to make it easier to grip, throw, whatever. He disputes it, but it cost the Patriots a first-round draft pick. And yesterday, we had a tampering situation come down by the NFL, and they docked the Miami Dolphins a first-round pick. This is what the NFL chose to do. We can debate all day long whether or not the NFL did right, but we have those 3 situations. The league agrees. Here's what's interesting. The league agrees that Ross did tell Brian Flores to prioritize draft position over winning. That's not in dispute. They don't dispute that $100,000 was mentioned / offered as incentive. They just decided that it was a joke. I will point this out, and Lewis Riddick's going to comment on that particular part as well. Every joke, every piece of sarcasm is rooted in truth.
Was a joke.
Oh, I appreciate Kevin Keats weighing in. Here's Lewis Riddick on that.
Brian Flores just came out here with a statement, if I can read it here real quickly. He said, I'm thankful that the NFL's investigators found my factual allegations against Stephen Ross are true. At the same time, I am disappointed to learn that the investigator minimized Mr. Ross's offers and pressure to tank games, especially when I wrote and submitted a letter at the time to Dolphins executives documenting my serious concerns regarding this subject at the time which the investigator has in her possession. So Brian Flores is not necessarily backing off of what he asserted happened to him. And, you know, the NFL isn't saying that, you know, is saying that, look, cannot find evidence that you offered $100,000 to lose games. But we do feel as though there was some concern over the integrity of the game as related to you prioritizing draft position over winning games.
Here's the, well, first of all, I 100% believe that Stephen Ross tried to get Brian Flores to intentionally lose games. 100% believe that to be true. I also don't believe it's the only time that's ever happened. I don't. I don't believe that it's the only time that that has ever happened. We understand that owners, and to certain extent, excuse me, even front offices, are looking long-term as opposed to coaches that have more self-preservation on their mind. So I believe that that was true. I don't believe it was a joke. But I also understand, even though it sucks, that the National Football League cannot ever admit that that is the case. What happens in a especially a sport that is so absolutely tied to gambling? I've always said this about the NFL. This is not a knock on the game. The sport is awesome. The sport is made for television. But the fact that gambling on the NFL is super easy to understand for just about everyone. Fantasy football only beats you up once a week. It ain't like playing other fantasy sports that force you to pay attention every single day. Football's, I would say, anywhere from 25 to 50% of football's popularity is rooted in gambling. NFL can't admit that. They can't admit that we have a team or teams that are trying to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it.
I think the fact that most mattresses are built to sustain a weight of 250 pounds is BS. I was ready for a change. I love that the Big Fig mattress supports up to 1,100 pounds. So if you and your partner are both curvier, if you and your partner are both larger framed, they're supporting you. It's so important for me to tell the world about brands that are truly seeing us as a community. And I love that Big Fig does that.
Big Fig is the company that believes that everybody and everybody deserves a great night's sleep. Learn more at BigFigMattress.com.
Mrs. Robinson brings us back from the, what, 1960s movie, The Graduate. And that's a perfect place to start with my friend Mike DeCourcy of The Sporting News, at TSN Mike on Twitter, who wrote a scathing takedown of former district court judge Sue L. Robinson's six-game suspension handed down to Deshaun Watson for at least 24 episodes of sexual misconduct, calling it nonviolent. I don't think that's even possible. Violence takes on many forms. I think there was a reasoning for it, and we'll get to it with Mike DeCourcy. I thought that would be a good place to start. I thought the column that you wrote was 100% on point, even though there was probably a good reason for her light suspension. What's going on?
Hey, how are you, Adam?
Doing well.
I'm interested to hear what the reasoning is.
Well, you and I communicated about this. I think whether she was doing it intentionally or not, because she is really rooted in law as a judge, that precedent really takes place. And I think her biggest mistake was just terming it nonviolent. And the NFL has done a very poor job across the board, even though there are some instances of longer suspensions. They've done a very poor job of, you know, considering and protecting women in their own orbit. So I think the NFL got what they deserved here.
I don't think that they have done a great job. But if you compare this suspension to prior suspensions for acts because she termed it differently for offenses, let's say, for untoward behavior, I think is the best categorization.
Mm-hmm.
For untoward behavior toward women that went in a variety of different categories. Look, they've dropped the ball once or twice. I mean, the Ray Rice thing was a travesty and subsequent was proven to be when the video surfaced. But there were many more cases where the suspensions were in this range for people like Ben Roethlisberger, Ezekiel Elliott. They were in this range.
Yep.
So you can't just say, well, that's what they got, so that's what he gets, because this is a circumstance that's much more comprehensive than these others. And they you grade worse, better, whatever. I mean, that's all really difficult to do, but we're talking about a much larger scale in this circumstance. And even down to the fact that people are coming back at me saying, well, she only was considering four cases because that's what presented to her.
Right.
I don't know whether that's what she considered or not. But even then, you have four people compared to, in a lot of these other circumstances, one person. So if it's four times more, then you would at least consider the possibility that the punishment would be in that range, and it's nowhere near that range.
Well, I think she throughout that entire ruling, which was what, 15 or 16 pages,
yeah,
she basically laid out the blueprint for a year-long suspension.
She did. That's
and right
the point.
She completely she even though she called it nonviolent, she basically said he endangered the well-being of women. Like, so which one is it? So she laid out the blueprint for a much longer suspension, possibly even a year long. I was surprised there was no fine attached. The NFL was obviously angered because it's clear the Browns can lie however they want about how, oh, no, we always structure long-term contracts like this. No, you don't.
Right.
That's fine. You can pretend all you want, but they structured the contract to minimize the amount of money he would lose by a fine. So the NFL wanted that. But logic and legal, I think, are two different things. We often look at what is logical and wonder why that was not followed legally. But I think whether she did it intentionally or not, and this is my biggest point about this entire issue, is that if the NFL really feels strongly about this, and I hope they do, then they have the final word. Roger Goodell can have the final say on this. He can appeal to himself, and maybe it was intentional, maybe it was not, but basically, you want to do this, you do the heavy lifting. I am here for Roger Goodell doing that.
I think that they are in a circumstance that I would imagine they're aware of what they have no great choice at this point. They have a better choice and a less better choice. The better choice is to acknowledge that their female fan base is going to have a problem with this punishment sitting where it does, and possibly a really significant problem. Whereas the other side, the negative on the other side of going to appeal and strengthening the suspension is that you probably get sued, possibly get sued.
Mm-hmm.
The NFLPA and Deshaun Watson have suggested they would go to court. And then you also undermine on it what's basically its first lap around the track, this new disciplinary process. I think that given those two difficult outcomes, I think that it's much worse to one, go for what's not right, and two, and more importantly, offend a significant segment of your female fan base, which is a significant segment of your overall fan base.
I'm not sure they care. If they were not going to punish the Washington Commandos for years and years and years of disrespect towards women that they employed, then I just don't. This is why I want to see the NFL put up. It would have almost been a cop out to have Sue Robinson do their dirty work. I think the NFL needs to do this on their own. I'm not sure they 100%. They're going to have to prove that they care about the women in their orbit. I got to ask
Clock's
you about
ticking, Adam.
It is.
Clock's ticking.
They have
they
to
got about 20 more hours.
Right.
Something like that.
By tomorrow morning, they have to announce an appeal, and it'll be very telling. All right, I got to ask you about basketball. The NCAA, rules committee is suggesting rules, some rules changes, two of which I think are really good. Making flopping, I don't even know what a Class B technical foul is. I don't know if that's like a Class B misdemeanor, but making flopping, putting that as a technical foul, I am all for getting flopping out of the sport. They need to do that in the NBA as well. They need to do that in soccer. We need to get the faking out of it. Are you on board with making flopping a Class B technical foul, whatever that is?
Yes, and I'm even glad that you dragged soccer into it, because I believe that soccer, and this is, I think that in the USL now, or maybe it's MLS next, one of those two, one of the lower divisions of American soccer, I think it's MLS next, for the younger teams, for all the various MLS teams. If you go down, that, you know, there are different rules. If you stay down, there are different rules now. And I think it's a great thing. You can't time waste. I can't remember the exact rule, but basically if you go down, you have to leave the field and you can't come back for a while. So you can't just go down unless you're really hurt. So I think that's a great idea. And I love the idea of penalizing flopping. Look, if you start to go down before you get hit, that's a flop. So I want to see how they define it especially when it's a technical foul. But we've all seen players go down when they're not hit at all.
Yep.
And that certainly is disruptive to the game. It's dishonest. And I'm all on board with this idea. I like this, what they've done with this iteration of the rules committee's meetings, because they didn't mess with the good stuff and they're going after the bad stuff.
Does Brad Davison have any eligibility left at Wisconsin? I'm just curious.
No, he doesn't. Oh. He did his fifth year last year. So,
gosh.
You can call this the Brad rule if you want. I don't think you'll get a lot of argument from the other 13 teams in the Big Ten. I don't think you will.
I'm still mad.
You wouldn't get an argument from down the road in Raleigh.
No, I'm still mad at that game, and I'm even more angry that ESPN did a montage highlighting how great Brad Davison was defensively. I'm like, are you watching these videos? I got to get to something else real quick about this, because I want to ask you a couple more things before we have to let Mike DeCourcy go from the Sporting News at TSN Mike. The one thing I didn't like was that they're going to add a TV time. They want to add a TV timeout during each half. I think we have to go the other way. I think we need to take TV timeouts out of basketball.
I'm not sure I don't understand what they're trying to get at there. I've never liked the TV timeout concept anyway. When I've argued in favor of quarters, now there are a lot of people that argue in favor of quarters for the foul concept.
No, we should. You and I are on the same page here. Quarters better than halves in basketball.
Yeah, it's not as much the fouls as it is it lessens the need for TV timeout.
Thank you.
Because you have the natural quarter breaks, and you can stuff as many commercials in there as you want. That's fine. But I've said this for like 30 years, that college basketball isn't played in halves anyway. It's played in 4-minute chicken McNuggets. That's what I've always said, because it's not because you stop every 4 minutes. So it's not played in 20 minute halves. So that's one of the reasons why I like the quarter concept, because the game flows better. So I don't understand why this suggestion is coming up. I don't know who it benefits. Certainly, television games, because of late timeouts and more so late reviews, are already going too long.
Mm-hmm.
And this to me seems suggestive of the possibility of making it even longer. I don't think that's good for anybody.
Yeah, we need quarters. At the 5-minute mark of each quarter, we have a TV time media break there. We have a break at the end of the quarter. They can stuff as many commercials as they want into halftime, as long as they don't take your time away on the Big Ten Network. At Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News at TSN. Mike, final thing, Premier League starts Friday. We have, I believe, Arsenal and Crystal Palace will get us underway Friday afternoon. And then at 7:30, Liverpool at Craven Cottage against Fulham. I'm trying to work this joke in here. Relative to Erling Haaland, new at Man City, How do you think Darwin Nunez will do at Liverpool? Get it, relative Darwin? Never mind.
I like it.
Thank you.
That's good.
I
think he'll do fine. The question for me is, and Jurgen Klopp has been really trying to build up Roberto Firmino, and my question is, are they doing that so they can sell him for more money? Or are they planning to play him ahead of Nunez? I don't know what the plan is yet. I think they'll ease Nunez in there, because the worst thing that can happen to a goal scorer is if you put him out there, and they don't have to right now. You put him out there and he doesn't get a goal for the first five games, and everybody goes, you know, oh my goodness, he's not all that. So I think that probably it's good if they ease him in, even if Firmino is just put on display to try to get the price up for the first 2-3 weeks before the deadline closes in the other European leagues. I don't think they'll sell him in England. I don't think they want to face him. But if he wants to go to Italy or Spain or something like that, it's a possibility that that'll happen.
I've got Darwin Nunez on my fantasy team. I need Darwin Nunez in the lineup.
You need him in the lineup.
I do. Yeah. I have Darwin Nunez on my fantasy team. I'm very excited for the start of the season. Mike DeCourcy, I will talk to you very soon. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Adam.
You got it. Take care. Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News.
This is the Adam Gold Show.